You are listening to Conversations with me, Pollyanna. 18 and older, please proceed and enjoy. Under 18, listen no further. On today's episode of Conversations with Pollyanna, we feature co-creation, the second generation sex educator for the 21st century. This weekend, their premiere book and memoir titled This Heart Holds Many, My Life as the Non-Binary Millennial Child of Polyamorous Family, was published through Thorntree Press. Today, we will discuss their life and the process of crafting their story. Welcome, Co. I love to ask people about their origin story, and you arguably may have one of the most unique ones of all that I have heard in a while. Tell us a little bit more about you and what got you started on the path you are on now. What moved you to inspiration?
What moved me to inspiration ultimately was the age-old wisdom that you, to find happiness, right, and find like your purpose is find the thing that you are uniquely suited to do in the world, right? That you are the full expert in. And for, I think for most people, that's our experience. You are the master of your own experience and the expert. So I took that and created this book. I've been thinking a lot, especially this weekend, being at a poly conference where there's none of my family here. None. That's such a unique experience for me. I'm thinking about my other poly siblings and fellow like kiddos who grew up in the similar tribe, and that my background with performance and acting and my love for words, you know, and being an orator and being a writer, all of that is a part of my story and is a part of me being uniquely suited to write this book and present it in this way. And I hope that I'm providing good voice to all of the other experiences out there that are similar to mine. And if, you know, I'm not, then I hope that they can speak to that themselves in the way that works best for them.
The term polywog may be new to a lot of folks. I know I have two of them. What was it like growing up for you? And what is it like now as an adult of polyamorous family?
I am so excited by this term polywog. In my book, I refer to it as being a poly kid, because that's the term that came up for me. I want to do some like etymological research on polywog, but because I got my inspiration for it from Queerspawn, who are children with queer families or second generation queer folks, and so that's what it means to me as like an identity marker. But that question of how was it to live inside, you know, the inside scoop, I like to say that it was just as awesome as you think it was, or you're hoping it was, as hard as it could be sometimes, and also probably a lot more boring in a lot of ways than you might expect. You know, it's a family. We go through our highs and our lows, but ultimately, I always have had somebody that I can call on and a wealth of support and acceptance and like people actively wanting to engage with me around, you know, growth and philosophy and emotional vulnerability. Like I've had a tribe, and I didn't really, really realize how much of a blessing that was. Not only to have a positive rapport with your parents of origin, but also then to have a wealth of chosen parents and to have them all get along. It's a huge blessing. As I've grown older, I see that more and more. Though I will also say that it's very interesting to have five different parents' relationships. My therapist and I go through a lot, you know what I mean? And I think that there's a lot of wealth of value for that, for me. And it can get a little overwhelming. I realized like I do need to keep a calendar of birthdays and special events just for my family. But I also had a cute little realization the other day. I've been feeling a little, like there's been some shifting in my personal dating life, and I also identify as poly, and I've been solo poly for a long time. And I'm just getting that sense of like, oh, will I have a poly family? And what will that look like? And I was like, what if I don't ever have a poly family? And then the joke is like, oh, I already do. Well, that's one of the things that I really like to speak to is that poly for me, like, it's funny, polyamory for me, the kind of love I associate that with is familial. Because we grossly over use the term love when we're talking about a variety of different things in the society. So when you are learning love, what is the kind of first kind of love that you learn? The love of your family and from your family, hopefully. And so when people are like, it's not about the sex, it's not about the sex for me, it's about the family. Mm-hmm. And also when it comes to little displays of public affection and stuff like that, one of the things that I think people get really nervous about is over-sexualization of the young. Totally understandable. But I also think that we're putting a very adultist and a very sexualized view on it. You know, when a kiddo sees two people being affectionate, it reminds them of being affectionate with their parents or snuggling, right? It's seen as an action of love, not necessarily eroticism.
So I've seen the documentaries, the specials out there where they include experts in psychology who claim these environments of polyamorous family are anti-family, unhealthy for kids. How do you respond to arguments like those? Do you think that they have merit?
Do these arguments have merit? I'm really glad that you actually went to the argument first, because one of my biggest pet peeves is hearing, but what about the children? Which is, again, it is a veiled statement. It is a veiled question that has a bajillion presumptions underneath it. Right? And so what I actually like to get to are the rational, logical questions that people have, mm-hmm. right? So if you're asking, but what about the children? Are you asking, how do you keep from over-sexualization? Are you asking, what are your measures for age appropriateness? Are you asking, does the child feel safe and secure with the emotional connections that they already have? Those are talking points that we can then discuss. Blanket statements that are meant to be sensational, I don't believe that they have enough logic in them to build from. Mm-hmm. And especially in an age where we question factual information, and especially in a topic that can be very subjective, I think that it's really important to look to experiences and believe the people who are having those experiences. Mm-hmm. Some of the ways in which I have found non-monogamous dynamics in families to be pro-family and very healthy are by the fact that you learn the fundamental tools and some of the most ideological tools of polyamory and non-monogamy from birth. You learn open, honest, vulnerable communication. Whenever I got punished as a kid, I would get punished worse for a lie. Right? Yeah.
Same with my kids. Yeah, I mean, how I was parented versus my kids, I mean, it feels like a new frontier, but absolutely, mm-hmm. honesty is paramount. And I don't impress upon them that. And maybe it's just the natural poly in me that kind of instinct, and maybe that's why poly works for me when it works.
Yeah, yeah.
is we don't just talk about that a lie's wrong. We talk about the motivations behind what brought us mm-hmm. to the lie mm-hmm. and what the repercussions are, mm-hmm. how each other feels. It's like a poly relationship conversation.
Yes, it's action and consequence. Every action has a reaction. Two of my mothers are scientists. Every action is a reaction. You know, your actions affect everyone around you. And being in tribe, having that sense of collectivism around you all the time, you are an individual, most certainly. And in my family, you know, we're a beloved hippie family. You can be whoever you need to be, right? But you are also within a system, a loving system. And like, we had a role in the family, you know? And so you can respect people's roles and respect where people are at. Mm-hmm. People commonly, I mean, the question that is commonly underneath it is like, when did you learn about sex? People are obsessed with how I learned about sex, right? Okay. it wasn't that I had one birds and the bees conversation, but it also wasn't that it was shoved down my throat. Our tool was that it was always available to be talked about if and when I was comfortable doing so. I came to them with my questions. And so were there times that I didn't feel comfortable and I didn't want to talk to them about it? Absolutely. But for the predominancy, I could just come to them with a question. And then the questions ended up evolving with me as a kid, because then you give age-appropriate information, you know? It gets my goat a little bit, you know, and so I have to calm myself, because all I know to be is the intention and action towards health. And sometimes if people make mistakes or if there are people who are not working within that integrity, that's when I see it falter. My grandmother admitted to me at one point that she had hope for me to lead a different path than my mom. And eventually she had to work with the emotions of noting that I didn't, you know? And I'm the first grandchild. So we had a little bit of that come up a lot. We had a lot of that come up in our relationship, you know? And in a certain way, I can see and understand the love that these people are trying to give, right? And that they're doing it with these tools that they have. Mm-hmm. And one of the works that I've done in my biological family is just understanding that we're working with a different set of tools and maybe try and share some tools sometimes. Mm-hmm. Meeting people where they're at, I think, is absolutely key. Especially coming as somebody who's like an extrovert and a large personality, like not overwhelming people, mm-hmm. I think can be a key factor.
Alrighty, loves, we're going to take a quick break and be right back with more of this amazing conversation. As we mentioned before, your first book just came out this last weekend. So exciting. Tell me what I will learn as I pore over the pages as a polyamorous mother of two. And as a fellow millennial.
So as a polyamorous mother of two, my hope is that you will learn something you don't already know. You know, like some tools, things that will help validate stuff you're doing, that will give you new inspiration and ideas for dynamics to try out in your family or help you feel seen. You know, see what it was like 10 years ago in the Northwest and how those feel like similar experiences to the ones that you're having and how they feel very different. I wish all of that. And I think that one of the fun things that is coming forth in the non-monogamous sphere is that we're still here, right? And we're still visible and we're still marginalized. We're a minority, but we seem to have gotten into the public consciousness without a lot of, honestly, violence, which in this day and age is kind of amazing. And I'm seeing this like thread of fluidity. Mm-hmm. I personally identify as pansexual and non-binary and polytheistic, and like, I'm all about the fluidity and seeing all of the different shades, you know, I'm bringing them together. And I think that there, if you look at different movements right now, there is a lot of rhetoric about finding value in the details and finding ways to break apart ideas that we previously thought were just one way to look at all the stuff inside them. And through that, fluidly find our way through this kind of like big, you know, like data mess that we found ourselves in. So all that to say, I think that some of the things in the book that normalize fluid experience are going to be really valuable. I had to be reminded that this was also a book it's a pagan book. You know, I knew it was a queer book. I knew it was inevitably going to kind of be a gender book by the fact that I refused to change my pronouns or the pronouns of my siblings in the book. And we used they, them commonly throughout the writing, you know, and my publisher, bless them, understands that, you know, but there are all these little things that are just like a part of my life that then came into sharper relief with the understanding that I have to meet people where they're at, right? And so I have to explain these things a little bit more simply or just explain them a little bit more because what does it mean to have a monthly pagan church? Like, who has that? Who knows what that is? I needed to explain that a little bit when I'm just like, oh, well, it was just church.
Yeah.
Right? You know? So hopefully those two things will help you find some joy and some self-time during your day as the mother of a poly mom.
Ever since I came out as bisexual polyamorous, I've been age-appropriate, honest with my kids about who I am. What advice do you have for me so that I can be the best poly mom to them as possible?
No pressure on either of us. I love that you're doing age appropriateness. That I think is a really key factor, you know, with all parts of parenting. Also with this aspect of your life. I am a really big proponent of being out to your kids. And there's a lot of different ideas on that. Mine is pretty blunt in that your kids already know something's up. You are not that sneaky. They know something's up, and so it's just putting a name to it, you know? And you can do that in age-appropriate ways, right? I talk a lot about that in the book. I have some, little cute examples, people get curious about, well, how do I have people over? And it's like, well, you have a sleepover, just like they have a sleepover, you know? And sometimes you go to somebody else's house for a sleepover, and sometimes mom's going to go to somebody else's house for a sleepover. You know, it's common sense stuff, and I get that people get nervous sometimes when trying to figure out, well, it is my relationships, and how do I explain that to my children? But it's also it's explaining the world, and it's explaining relationships to your children, mm-hmm. right? And that, I think a lot of parents can grasp that.
So my listeners already know this about me. I'm just a little type A, just a little bit. And so, of course, this translates into boundaries and relationship rules, which sometimes feel a little bit, you know, I don't know. Sometimes they don't always work. So I have this one called a 6-month rule, and it's a rule about meeting my kids. So it's 6 months of label status specifically, and then you can meet my kids. But I'm wondering, when is the right time for kids to meet significant others? And maybe for them to meet their significant other's children.
I think that it's important to have some kind of boundary around new partners meeting children. And it sounds like you have one that works for you. With a time limit, I do get curious about, has there ever been a time when you've wanted to introduce somebody earlier or not felt ready to introduce them at that point? Or has there, you know, been some circumstance where the kids already know the person? So what are people's contingencies around that? So really understanding what your feelings about your children's exposure are, right? And that's the key is exposing the children to people who are awesome, who are going to be beneficial to their lives, who are of positive and net value to your life. So it's important to figure that out, I think. And as somebody who is dating parents and is embodying a new term that I'm really excited to share, can I debut it on your podcast?
Yeah.
Excellent. So there's this term, meta parent. So it's kind of like a metamor, right? Like a person who, a love of your love, a person who's dating someone you're dating. But this is more like when you are dating somebody who has a child, or from the child's perspective, because I can speak to both, it's the new person that your parent is hanging out with a lot and who you may come to understand is another sweet person in their life. But as a kiddo, you know who your family is, or at least you're developing that sense and you have those instincts. So one of my biggest annoyances as a kid was people assuming relationship with me, assuming that they had power over me, because to assume familial relationship assumes a certain power dynamic, right? So I was really adamant about who were my aunties and uncles and who my parents were. So an example of this is I have a person who my dad's been dating for 30 years who lived two states away. And so she wasn't around all the time, but she's been around since before I was born, right? And so how would I relate to her? Because she's been fundamental in some of my raising. And so we came up with the term metaparent together, and I'm really stoked about it. And so as an aspiring metaparent, I personally also realize I need to know certain things. Mm-hmm. I need to know, do the kids want to meet me? Mm-hmm. Are they excited about meeting their parents as friends, or is this a little bit more of like an eye-rolling experience, you know? What am I meeting them as? Am I a friend? Am I a special friend? Cuddle friend? Partner? What does that mean to the kiddo? And then, like, what levels of PDA and dynamic stuff is okay with both the metamors and the metakids, I guess, you know? I think all of that is really important for me to know, to walk into that situation feeling, like, confident and comfortable. I think that when it comes to giving kids power in how they choose their relationships with other people, it's also an age-appropriate process, right? You know, you wouldn't necessarily ask a kiddo to make a relationship agreement with somebody unless they were really into that. But yeah, absolutely include your children in this process, right? That's one of the reasons that I really suggest being out to your children, is that so you don't have to have these awkward conversations and veil things any more than you already have to, like, in your life. There's so much that you're already protecting your children from. If you are ready to have people coming into your world, then that's got to be a collaborative process with the kiddo. Mm-hmm. One of the other things, since we're on the subject about attachment, it can be very difficult when there's a breakup and a child has attachment and that person goes away. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely a real consideration to have. One of the ways that my parents mitigated that was unless the person was truly toxic, they maintained enough of a rapport that I could have a relationship with that person if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. And that was to the point that especially as I got older, I got my own phone, things of that nature. I have relationships, you know, dear friendships and meta parentships, I guess, with these people who actually my parents don't talk to anymore. But I got called to be the witness at somebody's wedding. You know, I got called upon to help somebody promote their amazing one person show. Like, I have these incredible rich relationships because my parents had this love for a time, and that can go on and produce something else fruitful. And simultaneously, if I didn't particularly get on with the person, that was generally a pretty good indicator of the relationship.
Yeah,
it was like a weird little barometer of like, Dad, I don't really like that person. Maybe not. And then it turns out like, yeah, maybe not. It's nice to have that extra support and realism in your relationships, especially as your kids get older. Mm-hmm. So while we're on the subject of words and nerdiness, can I tell you about my relationship to the word polycule?
Yeah.
Cool. So polycule, like, it kind of just sprung out of the internet, right? At a certain point. Well, it feels like there were a couple of, like, key people who were kind of, like, propagating the term at the same time, and I consider myself one of those people, and I'm, like, pretty proud of it, because at the time, my story with, like, how I discovered polycule was I was doing organic chemistry homework with my my family, and we were talking about molecules, and my siblings were fully homeschooled, so we ended up talking a lot about schoolwork and ideas, and so we were talking about, like, the molecule and how you have strong bonds and weaker bonds, and sometimes bonds break and they have to reformulate, and people are sometimes, like, different parts are magnetized to each other. And I just, my brain lit up, and I was like, this totally reminds me of relationships, like our poly relationships. And my mom, the scientist, was like, very astute, wonderful observation. And I was like, wow. And so I would just always thought of them that way since, and I started propagating that and spoke to Dan Savage about it at one point, and it was an interesting little experience to have this be such a natural thing in my world, have a little article come out about my family and then have people start, that was like some of my first recognition. Mm-hmm. I had somebody come up to me and say, like, do you mind if I buy polycule.com? Because I want to try and do this like networking thing on it. But if you wanted to own it, I didn't want to hone in. And I was like, no, let's share it, you know? And I had other people be like, well, I was using that term on LiveJournal in such and such year. And I'm like, okay. It was just, it was a fascinating little moment to see how language was evolving and how much particularly like beloved nerd relationship nerds attached to these sentiments, and now to see how widespread it's used and how much value it's bringing to people's lives. I'm really proud of it, and I love the term, and so I wanted to share.
How can my audience learn more from you, connect with you, and follow you? Because I know they're going to want to.
Awesome. So you can get the book through Amazon, amazon.com. It's called This Heart Holds Many, also on Goodreads. And I am CoCreation, that's K-O-E, creation.com, at CoCreate on social media, and CoCreation@gmail.com. Thank you so much for having me and for getting together with me live. It's great to be in person with you.
Thank you so much for joining me today. This has been incredible. Did you like today's episode? Rate, review, and subscribe. Make sure you check out my website left in the show details, withpollyanna.com, for everything Pollyanna all the time. Want to support what I'm doing and become part of the inner circle? Visit patreon.com/withpollyanna and become a patron. As always, be good to yourself and be good to others. Laters. If you ask, I can share my everything except for where my past been. Passion was less than passive on the path in. Now it's all an act in a bad scene. Jazz swing them hips over here. All the ladies be like, hey. All the fellas be like, all contrary. I'm a different kind of rare. How to find, how to keep it possible to compare. The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.